You've been listening to Alaska Edition on KCHU Valdez, KXKM McCarthy, and KXGA Glen Allen. Coming up next on Coffee Break, we have Superintendent Gary Candelaria and Papa Pilgrim.
Or its underwriters. Opinions of differing perspectives are welcome on the show. If you would like to be or suggest a guest, please call 835-4671. Your participation on Coffee Break is encouraged. Callers to the show are not screened, and comments are considered sincere.
Good morning. It's Friday, October 3rd. You're listening to Coffee Break on KCHU, and I'm Meg McKinney. In 1980, by act of Congress, the D2 settlement set aside the Wrangell-St. Elias area for more throughout the state as national parks. The difference between these parks and those national parks downstates was that inholders could pursue traditional livelihoods while having reasonable and feasible access to their land. The definition of reasonable and feasible access has since caused conflict between private landowners within Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and the Park Service. Superintendent Gary Candelaria joins us for the first half of this morning's coffee break, and will speak with Park resident Papa Pilgrim during the second half. Good morning, Gary. Are you out there?
I'm here, Meg. Good morning.
Well, that's great. Well, how's the weather up there in the park?
You know, it's a beautiful sunrise. It's a little overcast, not quite as cold as it was night before last, so it's a fairly decent morning.
Well, we've got rain and fog down here. Pass on.
Well, you're welcome to them. I lived down on the coast for a while in Sitka, and I know what it can be like.
Well, we're just going to jump in because we've got until 9:30, and I got a whole bunch of questions.
Okay.
So what exactly happened in 1980 when Wrangell-St. Elias was designated a national park? What did that mean, you know, for private landowners?
Well, I think one of the things that certainly was provided for was that, you know, valid existing rights were to be recognized. People were going to be allowed to preserve and pursue their traditional lifestyles. You know, when the park was created, there was a great deal of private lands and corporate lands included within the boundary. It's something that the park has lived with from the very beginning, and certainly something the park considers a normal course of activity and operation, that, you know, there are folks who live in the park and who conduct livelihoods in the park, and while there are regulations and processes to be followed, most of them set out also in Anoka, we have, I think, every understanding that certainly private interests are going to be here. We certainly have no intent of seeing those go away, or certainly seeing subsistence curtailed.
Okay, there seems to be a buzzing with your phone. I think it might be because of speakerphone. If you can switch back, that might be good.
Okay, let me see what I can do. Hang on just a minute.
All right, that sounds good. We're speaking with Superintendent Gary Candelaria with Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and Preserve on Coffee Break this morning. So if you have any questions, call 1-800-478-5080. That's toll-free in the state of Alaska. And 835-5080. In the state. And in fact, I think we actually have a caller on the line right now. Good morning, you're on Coffee Break.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I have a question of Superintendent Candelaria that Anelka, that created the park, at that time, the Copper Basin and of course the whole state was extremely concerned about thousands of private properties being incorporated in these new areas, and it was very controversial. Congress created a compromise where if you had private land in the park, that your access was guaranteed. And the Anelka law says that the agency shall grant that access. Had that compromise not been put in, you might not have any park whatsoever. So that was the deal in 1980. But the Park Service has, of course, can't go against a directive from Congress that the access to these inholdings shall be granted. So what they're doing is administering the next sentence in the law that the access shall be subject to reasonable environmental regulation. The Park Service is interpreting that and administering it as essentially extreme or fanatical environmental regulation to put so much of a financial burden on the private property owner that nobody in their right mind can apply or actually achieve such access. Now, my question is that out in the McCarthy Creek Valley this summer, the Park Service has deployed armed rangers to provide cover for scientists and technicians that are going to an extreme level of measuring brush on the 100-year-old mining road that was depressed by a bulldozer path on an RS-2477 access. And you've gone to an extreme measure to collect information, and you've stated in the, that you're going to file a lawsuit against the private property owner, and yet you've gone out and done a swath in your own surveying activities around the private parcel and have destroyed far more natural vegetation that has never been disturbed with your own activities than the pilgrims have done. So aren't you making a mockery of environmental regulation and twisting it for the purpose of frustrating Congress's direct mandate to give the owner access?
Well, thank you for calling in with your question. Gary, do you have a comment on that?
And I'm sorry if the phone's still buzzing. We're unable to switch back now that we've switched to this regular speakerphone. We'll try to keep the background noise at a minimum here.
That'll be great.
I guess the short answer is no, I don't believe so. I know that, you know, much of what we look upon as whether something is extreme or reasonable is exactly what our own individual perspectives bring us to see. We have a responsibility to the American people to properly administer and protect the resources of Wrangell St. Elias. We're certainly willing to work with the people for reasonable access to their property. We made that offer when they first arrived in the Copper Basin. We've been rebuffed repeatedly by the landowners out there, by the Hale family, in our attempts to communicate with them, to work through issues of right-of-way and access. We've made numerous attempts to personally communicate, and also by letter, and by and we've communicated by email, but we've not been able really to get them to come to the point where we can sit down and actually talk about how they could certainly have gotten out to their property. Also, it doesn't necessarily mean that reasonable and feasible is most economical. That's not required by the law. They do have an airstrip. They're using an airstrip. They've used an airstrip. There are lots of ways that people come and go to their private property inside the park, not just here at Wrangell, but throughout Alaska. And I think that what we have to do is be able to work with each individual landowner to try to find a solution that works for them. But it takes two people or two sides to work. We've not been given the opportunity by these folks until this damage had occurred to work with them to try to find a solution.
So my question is more your double standard on environmental regulation. You destroy more natural vegetation in that valley with the Park Service's own activities than you're trying to hang on the pilgrim. And what environmental assessment or what environmental process did you go through before you cleared that swath of natural vegetation around their property? You didn't have to do that. You have in your own Park Service staff people with geographic information system experience that could have prepared you a very accurate air photo-based plat of that, and those that surveying swath is unusual. It's not normally done. But what environmental process have you gone through for your own destructive activities out there? How many man days of the team you've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars out there trying to trump up charges on the landowner, and how much of that team's efforts has been to inventory the Park Service's own damage around their property?
I think the clearing of the boundary line between public land and private land was necessary. Yeah, we have aerial photos. We actually had an aerial photo of the map of the property that was pretty accurate as far as what the boundary line was. But part of our problem down there is that the landowner, contrary to what I think most real estate practices are at the time, or that I would follow as a realty purchaser, didn't do a survey of his property. We can sit here in the office and say, yeah, we know exactly where the boundary is on an aerial photo. But the landowner can then say, well, I can't see it on the ground, and I don't have the aerial photo. So it was necessary for us in order to keep the property line very clear and to prevent it from being otherwise obscured or skewed, to clear the boundary line.
The BLM survey crew was out there 2.5 weeks. They established the corners within the first week with GPS positioning, just recovered the corners. It was not necessary to clear a 10-foot-wide swath line around that property. I mean, why did you do that? And what was your environmental assessment and decision-making process to do that? large landowners in this state, the Alaska Mental Health Trust, DNR, agencies around the country, the Forest Service has thousands, tens of thousands of private inholdings. They don't go out and clear swath lines like that.
I think you're being very general, and that's certainly your opinion, and certainly a privilege to be that way. We have a specific instance here with a landowner who doesn't respect boundaries that aren't very clear. And I think what we had to do here was clearly establish what the boundary between the public land and the private land was. That's part of the process that we needed because we were unable to work with these folks from the beginning on a more reasonable footing.
And it was necessary for you to destroy...
You're certainly entitled to your opinion as to whether it was necessary.
It was necessary for you to destroy natural vegetation in order to demarcate the boundaries, which could easily be done with your own land management records-keeping staff in-house. I mean, please, tell me, what environmental process did you go through, Mr. Candelaria, internally in the decision to clear that swath line? I mean, BLM does not do that as a normal part of their surveys. Other agencies that have inholdings and have the concerns that you've got don't do that. They don't destroy the environment ahead of time so that you can see a line. If you're going to fly out there with a helicopter or by air, to inspect damage, you should at least have a $10 air photo plat with you, and it'd be very easy to determine without doing a destructive thing like you've done ahead of time. So please tell me about your internal environmental assessment process.
We have the opportunity and the ability within the Park Service under our usual and standard operating procedures to do categorical exclusions for such things as routine maintenance of roads and trails, boundary lines, survey lines, and things that are important for the administration of the park. What we have here is an issue that it wasn't the Park Service that was damaging public land. It was this private landowner whose boundary line was not clear. Now he knows where his line is. He's able to stay on his side of the property and do what he wishes to do on his side of the land.
So you gave yourself a categorical exclusion to destroy more vegetation than the landowner, you know, you're accusing him of doing, but you're not going to give him a categorical exclusion to bring in emergency supplies for his family and animals?
You know, I'm not going to be able to convince you of anything, so I'll let you kind of carry on as you wish.
Well, don't convince me. Convince the listeners. Convince your neighbors that are listening to this discussion. And what I'm trying to do is enlighten them that you have your own internal processes. You went out and destroyed, you know, far more of a swath around this property. You gave yourself a categorical exclusion, which for the benefit of the listeners is a provision in NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, where an act is considered, you know, inconsequential and an agency doesn't have to go through the gauntlet and the expense of the full NEPA process. Now, they're exempting themselves from things that they're, of course, going to require any other Copper Basin resident that wants to utilize their rights granted by Congress in the ANILCA compromise. And did you have any meetings internally where you considered, Mr. Candelaria, the alternative of doing an air photo-based plat and not clearing a big swath line around those people's property? Or did you just do that without... Do you have memos? Have you got a decision track record where you gave yourself a categorical exclusion and wiped out a swath of vegetation, which is far worse than anything you're accusing the Pilgrims of doing?
Again, I think that we have a difference of opinion as to what's the problem here. What we have here is a property owner who's cleared public land, approximately 2 acres of public land, and then built a road, bulldozed a road, 14 miles, 12 miles.
They did not build a road. They traveled over a 100-year-old road. They crunched down a 10 or 15-year growth of alder on top of a road surface.
With a bulldozer, without authority.
A bulldozer with a blade up is a very different thing than building a road across a national park. And this rhetoric is deceiving, deceitful, for you to continue to talk like that to the press and to the people of the Copper Valley.
Well, the caller, I really appreciate your comments and your concerns. I'm also concerned, too, that we only have 10 more minutes left with Mr. Candelaria, and perhaps there are other callers out there who would like to call
in. Thank you very much. You're doing a great service in having him on.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye.
Bye. So you are listening to Coffee Break on KCHU, and we're speaking with Gary Candelaria, Superintendent of Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and Preserve. If you'd like to call in, you have another caller, I'm going to put you on. But I have a question I think that it's really important How does the park define reasonable and feasible access? I think that's really important for the listeners who don't live in McCarthy, so that other people can get a picture of what's going on.
Well, reasonable and feasible access is something that is difficult to define. It's not cut and dried as to what each individual situation has to have. What we try to do is work with each individual landowner who has a need for access and figure out ways that they can get there. What we've done in the past, we have given authorization for over-the-ground access. We've done it over the snow. We've done it over frozen ground. Folks use airstrips. You know, Mr. Kloss has an airstrip. And it depends on what the landowner needs as well. And that's why it's important for us to talk with each individual who wants to create some kind of access to their property. And I think, again, that we didn't have to be in this situation had we been able to work with the Pilgrims from the very beginning as to get them access to their land.
Well, we have a caller on the line. Good morning, you're on Coffee Break.
Hey, good morning, Meg. Good morning, Gary. This is Matt Ebermiller.
Good morning, Matt.
Glad to get to talk to you finally.
Good morning.
I wanted to present a voice of support here. I think there's a lot of knee-jerk reaction to any federal entity of any kind. And, you, of course, fall into that federal category. And I think a lot of people, if they would familiarize themselves with both yourself and the staff at the park there, they would find that they're, aside from being, purposely heavy-handed and, bent on restricting people, that you are, in fact, very light-handed and even-minded in your processes, and that you put forth, from what I've seen, quite an effort to make sure everybody's included, all viewpoints, whether you personally agree with them or not, in your management efforts. And I think a lot of the people that are really irate and up in arms are reacting just to the blush on the whole park issue. They dig a little deeper. They find that, as a matter of fact, their access hasn't been restricted. That the values that they go to the park to enjoy, whether it's motorized or however, are being preserved and protected diligently by the people in the park. And I see a source or the kind of the basis of a lot of the uprising is people just aren't aware. They want to be against a federal agency, and you guys are convenient. And they would familiarize themselves a little more with what you're doing. They would find out, in fact, that you're not the bad guys, and you're doing a very good job. I like wilderness. I like it the way it is, and I know a lot of other people do also, and I hope you carry on.
Well, thank you for calling in, Matt.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Gary, don't you guys hold open houses or, don't you periodically through the Wrangell St. Elias National Park, you guys host a forum for people to talk about concerns within the park or in an effort to familiarize themselves with what's going on? I seem to recall stuff on the billboard. Yes?
Whenever we have to do an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement, general management plan amendments, development concept plan activities, there's always opportunity for public comment. It's difficult sometimes for folks to get to places, but we take things in writing. We take things over the phone as far as comments on plans and intentions go. In the process of doing a long-range interpretive plan, then we tell meetings throughout the Copper Basin with the communities that are affected by park activities. For each of the different environmental assessment plans that we put out for all kinds of park activities and road construction and things like that, there's opportunities in those for public comment. You know, it's a challenge to get to every corner of 13.2 million acres. It's I've got a small staff. We're scattered across, you know, the largest national park in the system. We have 23 communities around us, stretching all the way from Yakutat to Solana, Tok, Northway. So, you know, folks do have the opportunity to make comments about things. They do have an opportunity to give us, you know, their opinion of activities that are going on. But, you know, in some ways, what we have to do is we have to look at what you know, the long-term benefits and effects of things are going to be, and not everyone's going to always agree with our decisions. We have people who would, you know, like nothing but wilderness. We get letters from folks too who would like us, you know, to limit the amount of entrance into the park. We get pressure for the eventual phasing out of subsistence. You know, these are all things that we have to put into a balanced situation and not go to one extreme or the other, but look at what we have within the law and regulation, the ability to do.
Gary, we have a caller on the line. Good morning, you're on coffee break.
Good morning. I would like to comment on the first caller.
If you could turn down
your voice. Although he may have had a point, his bullying went beyond reason, and I believe that Gary answered his question early on in the conversation. It would be appreciated if a caller like that would be cut off once the question is answered so that we can have more comments. And Gary's reasoning for the pilgrims needing more clear boundaries, being a McCarthy neighbor and having my boundaries crossed by the pilgrim, I can agree with him. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. Well, as we reach the tail end of your half hour, Gary, I have maybe a question that hopefully a lot of people out there are asking. You know, rather than starting civil proceedings against the pilgrims, have there been an effort to mediate things that are going on? And
I think one of the things that we have, you know, started from the very beginning was trying to meet and talk with these folks. Again, we do recognize that there's going to be a need for access when somebody buys land inside the park. What we have is a process that needs to be followed. We tried to institute that process with them. We've not been successful to this point. But, you know, there are a lot of folks out there who want access, who need access, and who have access. And they follow what's supposed to be done. They follow the process. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. Not simple. It's not just a snap of anyone's fingers. But we have experience in doing this and in getting it done. So we would like to, you know, have the opportunity to continue to work towards a solution. Now, as far as mediation goes, I think what we have to have is, you know, a case that will come forward. I think that there will be an opportunity at some point that the U.S. attorney will look for an opportunity to talk with the representatives from the pilgrims if a case is filed. And what happens with that, you know, we'd have to wait and be seen. But certainly, I think there's still a need that the pilgrims have for access, and they really should begin to talk with us, I think, in a constructive manner to try and get some reasonable access to their property.
All right, well, we have one more caller. So good morning, you're on coffee break.
Good morning, I'm a resident of the Copper Basin, and I have a question for Candelaria regarding the type of survey that they were reestablishing in the process. I had not heard that they had cut a line around it with a bulldozer, but yet, was that a special survey? Original survey of the track that the pilgrims have.
Would you like to comment on that, Gary?
The BLM surveyors did a retracement of the original survey. They didn't use a bulldozer to clear. I think what they used were hand tools and a saw to mark the line where it ran through brush so it could be clearly seen where the private property was and where the park property was.
Well, the question is, were they reestablishing the lines of an adequate park survey, that is, section and township, or was it a special survey?
It was a mineral survey, as I believe.
Are they special surveys, or are they tied into the cadastral survey, that is the meridians, the township lines, and range lines?
I believe the park did a cadastral survey, but the actual survey lines that were on the ground surrounding, I think this is Spokane Placer and Marvelous Mill that you're referring to, were actually originally a mineral survey.
Okay, well, I'm familiar with the land surveys, and I have been trying always keeping track of where my corners are. And after they have grown up, if you are 40 feet from your corner, you don't know whether you're on your line or not. To answer your one of the earlier callers who was making a fuss about the clearing of the line, normally it's the owner's responsibility to see where the corners are. Well, you want to see where yours are because you're the park service. The Pilgrims should have been wanting to see where they were, and the first thing they should have done was establish their lines and corners. And in order to know where you are on your property, you have to have an open line. This is an explanation of, as I understand, in this area of why you have to open a line so that you can see basically from one point to another. Because when you're working on your land, unless you have an opening to look down, you don't know where you are. So it was a favor to the Pilgrims to have the Park Service open the line. It would have cost the Pilgrims $5,000 at least if they had had to, as is normally done, the landowner would have established his own lines. So I thought the questions raised on that previous caller were totally out of line, and I wanted to help make it clear that in establishing your property, you do have to have lines of sight between the points, corners, whatever you call them, that indicate where you are.
Well, thank you for your comments. We're going over, and we need to share the hour. So, thank you so much for calling in, and I appreciate your comments about the line.
Appreciate it.
And Gary, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I hope that we can start a little dialogue, and maybe we'll do another show down the road.
Thanks very much, Meg. Anytime.
Thank you for calling in.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Coffee Break, and we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're at Papa Pilgrim Online.